Okay, welcome back to the broadcast. We're in the second hour. I'm Chris Sterner. It's American Exposé, and we have Hansa Molina with us. And let me do another sentence of this article for Hansa, and then we'll take Roger and TJ. It is probably unlikely that the various calls for Putin to retain power are unorchestrated, though certain suggestions may be spontaneous in the sense that they are not prearranged, but offered out of a sincere effort to curry favor with the man who is now indisputably the most powerful in Russia. For now, Putin has apparently restricted his comments to nothing he might like to run again in 2008 if the Constitution permitted it. And it does not. Thus, some of the methodologies being offered by a gamut of national and regional lawmakers have the air of trial balloons, as if Putin or his surrogates were testing the response of Russian citizens and of the world at large to various alternatives before Putin's runs out of time entirely. And yet, they don't care about the people of Russia and the ultimate end goal, do they, Hansa?
No, absolutely not. Never have. Communists never care about their own people.
And right there, they say in this article, KGB alumnus Putin. KGB? Is it any different than the Homeland Security that we have today?
Oh. Chris, you're mixing. Yeah, well,
I'm mixing apples with oranges, aren't I?
Well, absolutely. You know, you can compare people. Certainly.
You know, we do have former Soviet people involved in the passport that Charlotte Isabey's been talking about, and I haven't researched it enough to talk on it, but we do have these exchange programs going on between our country and Russia.
Well, let me put it this way. The caller before, he said basically something that I totally disagree with. The use of bankers and this New World Order idea. Let me use a little bit of logic here. Since the bankers were the ones who financed the Russian Revolution, and to a certain extent that was true regarding Germany, and Golitsyn explained this very well, how they were fooled into supplying Lenin with money because Germany wanted Russia to leave the World War One. Let me read real quick from the New Lies for Old. Germany played an special significant role in the Soviet militarization. According to the secret clauses of the treaty, that was Treaty of Rapallo in 1922, Germans helped to build modern aviation and tank factories in the USSR. Communists spoke cynically of foreign concessionaires and businessmen as assistants of socialism. Long-range planning and industrialization were launched. The sure recognition of the Soviet Union by the West helped the regime to neutralize internal opposition and so to stabilize itself politically. It is fair to say that the foundations of Soviet heavy and military industry were laid in the 1920s with American, British, Czechoslovak, and after the Treaty of Rapallo, German help. But the Germans were... let me jump down here. Germans were interested to get Russia out of the World War One, so they helped even during the war with supplies of money. What Golitsyn says, and I'm jumping here, the European bloc that it was anticipated would be formed against the Soviet Union did not materialize. The jure recognition was granted by all major countries except the United States. The Russian emigre movement was successfully penetrated, discredited, and left to disintegrate. The Treaty of Rapallo signed with Germany in 1922 raised Soviet prestige, helped to increase Soviet military strength, precluded the United anti-communists front in Europe, and weakened the Weimar Republic. So the Germany basically learned the hard way that you can't trust the communists.
Okay, we'll be right back. Stay with us.
I cry for my country, for the pain that it's been through. She's been made to suffer for the profit of a few.
Welcome back to the broadcast, listeners. Once again, this is Chris Gerner with American Exposé, and Hansa Molina. AntiCommunistAnalyst.com is his website. AntiCommunistAnalyst.com is his website, listeners. Let's go to Roger in Pennsylvania. We've had Roger waiting for quite a while. Roger, welcome to the show.
Yes, thanks, gentlemen. And I'd like to ask Hansa and Chris, both of you, if you had any thoughts on this. Now, just I guess it's going to be easier to for me to find two or three communists under every bed, because when I thought I'd heard it all, this was Professor Thomas Woods, the author of Politically Incorrect Guide to American History, several times over the last couple of weeks, and I tried to draw him out a little better on this, but that is from, now he says the real expert in this, I think, would be who he identified as Stan Evans. I think that might be M. Stanton Evans, who he meant. I'm not sure there. Anyway, he's said to be coming out in a book about this forever now. But that from the saved-up Soviet encrypted transmissions of like 30-some years ago, I'm guessing he implied the McCarthy era alone, that now we've decrypted now some 10% of those transmissions. And I'm guessing the effective bit level would be substantially less than what's used today. And since it's only 10% encrypted, I'm speculating with today's high-speed computers that they could slice through that like butter. So my speculation was that it was deliberately on go-slow orders to decrypt this stuff. And, you know, this stuff can be very valuable for intelligence usable even today. But he said that with only 10% done, they've already identified some 350 additional active Soviet agents working in American government. That is besides what I speculate is a relatively trivial amount of potential that would have been acquired from Winona and other Russian archive material. Now, I'm extrapolating out and saying to myself, well, then you could extrapolate out to 3,000-plus active Soviet agents, and how would this explain substantially more penetration and inexorable weaving of Soviet agents into our government carrying through to today, and would go a long way towards explaining a rather deliberate blind eye, is whether you had people that were starry-eyed ideologues or blackmailed, or once they are provide information, then they're blackmailed and into further complicity. Any thoughts on that,
Hansa?
Well, it's pretty simple. Where, you know, pretty much they set up very very good strategy, and I came across the original documents that were dated in 1964. The strategy was updated in 1978 in terms of Czechoslovakia espionage. It was very very well done. Basically, the recruitment policies were, simple. They separated the people that were already involved or basically interested in communist ideology and agreeing with it ideologically. Those were the easiest ones to recruit. Of course, even those people had to be compromised in order to prevent any kind of deviation of these people from the policies of the Soviet Union and later Russia. Of course, there were also people who were recruited based on the false flag recruitment strategy, which basically involved applying pressure on them, basically asking for help from, as the Russian agents were pretending to be working for friendly intelligence service. Namely, they used quite often Mossad, the Israeli intelligence, or South African intelligence, or in that for that matter also their policy was very carefully crafted. The person that was asked to cooperate had to have no knowledge in that sector, in that sphere, so they, you know, so the person couldn't really have knowledge about, let's say, about how Mossad works or that. Otherwise, the operation wouldn't be possible. So then they went into the third phase, which was basically compromising the person based on the psychological profile that they did. In some cases, these psychological profiles took over a year to conduct, and they really did thorough analysis of the person, what he likes, whether he likes women, drugs, can he be supplied with drugs, compromised based on that. These operations were very successful. That kind of ties into a policy that was implemented in the CIA during the 1980s, in the beginning of 1980s, and I heard about this several times. The policy was that they were, the CIA was actually recruiting people with basically less moral values and people with sort of not as good past as you know the people would hope for, basically with some kind of problems and
pre-compromised and therefore more malleable.
Right, and I'm
that's
thinking,
a good statement.
Yeah, I'm thinking that this kind of policy had to be presented by already Soviet agent within the CIA. Because that opens up a door for the Russians and related services to recruit these people based on that sole information. Because, of course, these files are there, so there's always something else. And once the policy was, once the person agreed to cooperate and supplied any kind of data, then the person was immediately approached by an agent or a recruiter and supplied the information that he betrayed the country, and now he's a really traitor, and now he has to really cooperate with the Soviets. These recruitment tactics were updated in 1978 by the Czechoslovak military espionage and by the civilian espionage. In the case of Czechoslovakia, the whole bloc cooperated on these policies. Somebody always added some new strategies and techniques how to recruit people. I know about several cases involving people. For example, in Western Germany, just the estimate on Western Germany is about 30,000 high-level management people in Western German industry that were compromised and recruited by the Russians and Czechoslovak intelligence, and also East German Stasi was very active in West Germany. There's one thing that really I didn't know that is really important how it all started, because this was published by former French intelligence officer Pierre de Villemarest. At the end of the World War II, Gestapo orchestrated operation, secret operation codenamed Vampire in Western Europe, all over Western Europe. Basically, they infiltrated, special agents infiltrated underground organizations that were fighting the Nazis, because the Nazis knew that they would lose the war, but they wanted to continue the National Socialism in Europe. And so these Gestapo agents were already infiltrated. It was a very successful operation, except the problem was that the Red Army was the first one in Berlin, and they already had people within the Hitler's headquarters that protected these files from being destroyed. And also, if you remember, the agreement was between the U.S. military and U.S. leadership and Stalin, that Stalin would also be first in Prague. And the prize was, again, the Gestapo files in Prague, which they have names of people. For example, I give you the name of Miloš Havel, who was and also father of Václav Havel. Both were elite Gestapo agents, and Havel family, Václav Havel was the leading dissident, so-called dissident, that was involved in the perestroika in Czechoslovakia. So these people were also, these agents of Gestapo, the family was working for Gestapo during those years. They were elite agents of Gestapo. Nothing happened to them after the World War II. As a matter of fact, Miloš Havel was allowed to leave Czechoslovakia during the Stalinist era for West Germany, open up a restaurant with nobody knows with what money in Munich, and was frequently hosting people from the Czechoslovak exile. So this is just to show that the communists basically used these people as agents of influence in the West and converted them into these agents. Of course, this continues throughout the years. There was information that the German terrorist group, or basically a communist group called the Red Army Faction, some members of that group infiltrated one of the biggest German companies, Siemens, which later on supplied technology to Saddam Hussein. So this is just to show that the Russians are using people that have no visible connection to Russia to facilitate these kind of deals and these kind of bad policies that are always oriented to cripple America's foreign policy. So this is how it works, basically, and these facts are irrefutable. So, you know, we can pretty much see how the operations work, and Russia is always coming on top of it.
I was just kind of a little more interested if you had any thoughts on the reasonable expectation of the long-term implications up through today in the Washington, D.C. scene, and how, you know, the whole D.C. culture of blind eye.
Stay with us. We'll continue. Stay with us. Broadcast listeners, your continued support is requested by me, listeners, to keep this broadcast going. Please continue to support RBN and our efforts over here. Very, very important. Communism dead? You've got to be joking, people. Communism dead? All 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto being implemented in America. The 45 communist goals of 1963, all under full implementation. Including, number one, U.S. acceptance of coexistence as the only alternative to atomic war. Insane, listeners, if you do the research, and it's all documented on AmericanExpose.com. Every bit of a documentation you'll ever need is there, and I don't take credit for it. But keep in mind, Agenda 21, the plan for the human race in the 21st century, is the biggest well-kept secret in the world. Roger, do you have a parting shot for Hansa?
Yeah, I was just thinking stuff like the eventual merger, for example, even if you have people, now there are certainly people that do believe it rather forcefully, but even those who didn't would be kind of forced into pushing the agenda for blackmail alone. You know, I'm talking the whole Washington culture. And might this much deeper penetration than we would have even imagined, 20, 30 years ago, go a fair way to explaining a part of that?
Thank you for your call, Roger.
God bless.
Go ahead.
It's simple, basically. We have to look at now. It's being done on the terms of using somebody else, usually doing the dirty work for the Russians, so the Russians could never be seen behind such tactics. I'm basically referring to the acquisition of FBI files on leading Republicans by the Clinton administration, which is highly questionable to me, and it's why this was done. To basically have these kind of details on leading figures, political figures, and legislature members. And therefore, you know, once you have these kind of tools to run the country, it can never fail. And the questionable past of Bill Clinton makes me think that there's more hidden here than meets the eye, basically.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Especially when you have Bill Clinton going to the Soviet Union in 1969 and coming to Czechoslovakia in 1970 in January. He was staying in a house of a son-in-law of a founding member of the Czechoslovak Communist Party. this guy, the son-in-law, was also a high-level Czechoslovak military intelligence officer, Colonel Bedřich Kopold. Bill Clinton befriended their son, who also was able to study in Oxford in Britain during the communist era. So that again signals that this is highly profiled communist family. What was Clinton doing in such family? I mean, now the question is, would the communists allow themselves to pass on such opportunity to recruit such a person that was already interested ideologically in their in what they were doing? And you know, let's not hide it. You know, Bill Clinton was interested in communism. As far as this, socialism and
wasn't he just brainwashed into communism?
No, I think he was genuinely involved in it. I mean, I think he was genuinely interested in it.
Uh-huh.
There was an article in Italy that suggested that he was very serious about creating the so-called cooperatives in the agriculture sphere, basically
mm-hmm.
what the
mm-hmm.
communists had. He was seriously. Then don't forget that he was gonna nationalize the healthcare, which is very large chunk of the private industry in America.
Yeah.
So that's 1/7 of the industry here. So that would be a major setback for the private ownership here in America. Now that was another situation and policy what the Clinton was proposing. Of course, we have to look at the supply of uranium to North Korea by the Clinton administration. That was favoring basically giving the North Koreans ability to produce nuclear weapons. Also the blind eye to the L'Oreal communications and Hughes Electronics sale of top state of the art basically satellite technology to communist China, which are used for military purposes now, and China is able to navigate their missiles nowadays with that supply of technology. So it's much more here what Bill Clinton did, and I wouldn't really be scared to call it high treason, because that's what it is, and we can't really deviate from that statement, because if you favor a communist enemy of America with these kind of policies, then what do you become? I mean, this is quite visible.
And, absolutely.
Yeah. So then again, the political will of the recent administration is sort of mystery to me, because we don't really know why these people are not investigated thoroughly and brought to trial.
We'll be back with TJ in Minnesota and Hans and Molina, listeners. The connections are very obvious to the situation we live today, people. We'll be back to continue. Stay with us. Taipei Times listener, China paid for war games. According to this newspaper, Chinese and Russian commanders began the practical phase yesterday of the first ever joint military exercises, coordinating the creation of a combined unit that will stage a landing on a Chinese peninsula to practice stabilizing a fictional country. The chiefs of staff from both countries' militaries departed early yesterday from Vladivostok back to their capitals after inaugurating the drills Thursday. A spokesman in Russia's Pacific Fleet Command said, on condition of anonymity, because he wasn't allowed to speak on the record. The exercises began Thursday with a day of consultations between the two countries in Vladivostok before the war games moved Friday into the practical phase, the Russian spokesman said. The exercises running through next Thursday, named Peace Mission 2005, will climax with amphibious and paratrooper landings and an aerial blockade at the Shandong Peninsula on the Yellow Sea. Some 10,000 troops, mostly Chinese, and about 1,800 Russians are taking part. It's all on the website, AmericanExpose.com. Dennis the Menace at it again. And TJ in Minnesota, welcome to the broadcast.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you fine.
Normally, I'd like to talk and get off quick. Today might be exceptional. The first 8 minutes of your show didn't get broadcast. Maybe you already addressed. There's a real problem in the shortwave community, and it's going to affect any new listeners to your show, and I want to clarify it, and I'm angry. For the second time in August, I had the gross displeasure of hearing Alex Jones state specifically, quote, "There's no such thing as communism." And he claims the UN is like a big submarine that fires a lot of torpedoes and you don't know which one to get. We're going to clarify this right now, Hansa.
Well,
now, let me do it. Let me do it for you because I got a Webster's Dictionary. And this one was printed in 1995. And I guess Alex doesn't own a dictionary. Communism. First definition, a theory advocating elimination of private property, and who has that in mind these days? The UN. The second definition is a doctrine based on revolutionary Marxist socialism and Marxist Leninism. Now, that falls in line with all that you have to say, Hansa, and I want the listeners to this shortwave network to know that somebody's wrong. Either communism does exist, is definable, does have people running it. They're not shadows. They're not puppets. The only puppet that could ever talk, his name was Pinocchio, and Walt Disney created him.
Well, listen to this. Come on. This is insane. For someone to make a statement like that, is a disinformation person.
It's a giveaway. It's a giveaway.
Then he
goes into a diatribe.
Well, I don't think it's logical to beat up on other hosts because there's contracts that have been signed, and he's on the same network we're on here. And I feel sorry for the young man because you look at the U.S. Code, Title 50, Chapter 23, Subchapter, Roman Numeral 4, Section 841. I'm just going to read the first sentence. Congress finds and declares that the Communist Party of the United States, although purportedly a political party, is in fact an instrumentality of a conspiracy to overthrow the government of the United States. It's in the U.S. Code, listeners.
Thank you, Chris.
Amen.
God bless your efforts, and I applaud both of you guys' efforts, and Bob from Kansas with his sterling, bellicose, pragmatic solutions. Now, there was a question you posed at the beginning of the show, Chris, to Hansa. Why isn't our administration concerned? Well, our administration is joined at the hip, Hansa. They're joined at the hip
with the
Soviet leadership.
Let us look at the whole society in America. We have fallen into a trap of easy money, easy profit from these communist countries or formerly communist countries. We have actually accepted the economic news that open up these so-called markets. This is exactly what the communists want us to do. Now, there was a question about the New World Order. Personally, I think, and I speak from factual experience, that the whole idea was orchestrated by the Russians in order to sway the attention from the Russian state towards the international banking system, which was, in fact, also penetrated by communists. When we talk about people who supplied money to Lenin, we must not forget the name of Armand Hammer, who was later recruited as a KGB officer, basically, KGB agent of influence. There was also another communist who was supplying money, member of the Communist Party USA, Samuel Rubin. These are people that are ideologically aligned with the communist cause. Now, then you can't call them bankers anymore. The problem I have with the idea that these are bankers supplying money to communists, I don't see how any sane person that owns financial services could supply money to venture that will eventually bring down the whole
structure.
This guy and his, well, his whole services, basically.
Yes, and you hit the key word. You don't see how any sane person could do it. Well, they're not sane.
Well,
that is what we all realize, that the New World Order is insane.
Well, the thing is, it's, you know, if you want to make money, then you wouldn't obviously supply
they
money.
They got plenty of money. They can print money.
Well, yeah, but there's no results for them coming out of communism.
Power
because
and control.
They will never be made part of it. They
power
will never
and control.
Be made part of the decision-making hierarchy.
Well,
it's egocentricity to a demonic degree, and that's what all these leaders are into, the big three. The Ruskies, the Chinese, and that pyramidal organization out there on the East Coast of the United States.
Yeah, good. That's a good statement.
See, the real comrades from Russia and China are about, they never care about money. You know, they never care about making profit. That's the misconception what the Americans have about this. They don't think that way.
I agree.
They think in terms of power over the people, and they know that their ideology is outright criminal, so they have to protect it by spreading this ideology all over the world, so they wouldn't have to worry about countries like America or Western Europe or any Western civilization in period. They want to destroy the Christianity. They are involved in taking God out of the countries that believe in God. They take the money from the people that supply them, and they lure them into these ventures in order to destroy them in the end. I have I wrote a recent piece for my website, and I quoted unusual source. It's I'm a traditional Catholic, and I quoted Pius XI, the Pope Pius XI, in his brilliant encyclical Divini Redemptoris, written in 1937.
Yeah.
Let me quote from that encyclical. I suggest the readers to read this encyclical because it shows exactly what communism is about. He says, "See to it, venerable brethren, that the faithful do not allow themselves to be deceived. Communism is intrinsically wrong, and no one who would save Christian civilization may collaborate with it in any undertaking whatsoever. Those who permit themselves to be deceived into lending their aid toward the triumph of communism in their own country will be the first to fall victims of their error. And the greater the antiquity and grandeur of the Christian civilization in the regions where communism successfully penetrates, so much more devastating will be the hatred displayed by the godless." This is positively brilliant. It's exactly what the communism is about. There's no negotiation with these people. When they come, they will not look who supplied the money. They will look how they will run the country. If they have to set up concentration camps, they will do it. If they have to murder millions and millions of people, they will do it. They will not accept anybody as equal. That's the true face of communism, and America better wake up to it, because otherwise we will be in deep trouble, and it's coming soon, I'm afraid.
TJ?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, the upside of these war games they're having, I say this tongue-in-cheek, but very realistically, as long as the Chinese and the Ruskies are got their planes together somewhere else, I appreciate it. Then I don't have to watch them flying over our airspace, which they've been doing for quite a few years. So I hope they just keep up with their games and
you know,
whatever.
We, you've been monitoring aerial spraying. We've been seeing aerial spraying. It's got to end up with the thought pattern being engineered by this document that we have on the site. All nations have quotas for population reduction on a yearly basis, which will be enforced by the Security Council by selective or total embargo of credit, items of trade, including food and medicine, or by military force when required.
And they have considered it to be a requirement as of 2000, and that's when it began, and the Soviet security generals running the controls, and our government is complicit with it 100%.
our people, the people in this country, in its various degrees of alertness and awakeness, are the obstacle for the big picture in place. The armed citizenry of this country is a problem that they don't know how to deal with.
You got it there. You got it there, and that's why lead is your most precious metal, ladies and gentlemen.
Do not let yourselves be disarmed in any mannerism whatsoever because of the situation that's being engineered by the State Department and the UN system, of which the Security Council is the Russian in charge, allied with Communist China at the Security Council level of the UN system.
Yeah, you said it really well. You said one thing that I want to add to it, Chris. You said that they can't really disarm us. Well, that's exactly the reason why their only option to destroy America is through military force.
Sorry to say.
Because there's no way they can do it peaceably. There's no way.
They've tried. They've tried to disarm this country.
Right. They tried, but see, it doesn't work.
Right.
It can't work. You have to change the Constitution and the Second Amendment. And there's no way that it can be changed. It's too obvious, too open. People have weapons at home, and they will never give them up. So the only option they have, and that's why I'm saying that all this stuff regarding United Nations is only part of their overall strategy to destroy America, destroy the Western society as it is.
Mm-hmm. It's the military part, though. It is the military part.
Absolutely, I agree. Absolutely, it's to take America. Look at the situation in Iraq. There was suggestion from Condoleezza Rice and from her circles, instead of hitting Iraq hard and destroying these stockpiles that were clearly there. It was published by Bill Gertz and Washington Times and other sources, satellite pictures and all that. Pentagon came up with it, and there was other sources that tied Russia to Iraqi WMDs. The Russians removed them out of there. Of course, in order to prevent America to uncover this kind of situation in Iraq, the Russians wanted to discuss the American policy, so basically slow us down through the United Nations Security Council. Well, so Condoleezza Rice was the one who basically suggested that and came up with that policy, and so instead of President Bush going firmly against Iraq, even though it would be against the today policies and the situation in the American society today, I'm talking about the decadence we live in and political correctness, even then that would create problem for the Russians. So they had to create this kind of policy for us in order to gain time and to remove these weapons out of Iraq. And of course, I'm convinced that this also served Russia for the policy, for the strategy to replace President Bush with a more favorable person. In the case of that was done last year during the presidential elections when they wanted to the person was John Kerry, basically. And if we had John Kerry as president, then that would create a lot of advantage for Russians in terms of their implementing the policies against America, namely in crippling the U.S. military, basically. And John Kerry stated it during the presidential debate. I can pretty much say that's what the Russians would want.
Well, Hunter, listen, here's the situation. We went through the Vietnam experience, which was a setup situation already. We're in the Middle East experience, the same thing as Vietnam, because you don't know who your enemy is, and they're called insurgents now.
Right.
We're in a mess.
Right, and that's obvious that it was created for us by these by Russia. And I there were statements deliberately released, and for example, in Czech press, in Czech Republic, about the connection between Mohammed Atta and the Iraqi intelligence officer Al-Ani. But they never said about Atta being trained in Czechoslovakia in 1988. They never released any of that.
There you go.
It's the Russians behind 9/11, and of course they want to stretch our military thin. and have us fight wars outside America in order to attack America directly. And, you know, basically, since our troops have no nuclear weapons in Iraq at their disposal, as far as I'm, you know, concerned, that makes them sitting ducks, basically.
So number two of the current communist goals of 1963, read into the congressional record in 1963, U.S. willingness to capitulate in preference to engaging in atomic war.
Right, and that stays this right there. That's it. You know, we had so many chances in history to cripple and destroy communism. But the changes ended basically, and I told you this before, in my opinion, it ended with the removal of General Patton.
Yes.
From the leadership of the military leadership, because exactly he was willing to fight the Bolsheviks and the Russians and destroy them and destroy communism. He knew back then.
Yep.
What communism is about. He knew, he understood, because
George
he was
Patton.
brilliant general. I mean, that says it all. That's
George
why he's
Patton.
Left in Czechoslovakia, because he wanted to destroy the communists and run the Russians back where they belong.
Listen, when we get back, we'll give TJ a parting shot, and we'll close out this 2 hours. Listen, the pit in my gut is still there. I'm still very, very concerned, on a daily basis for our country and its survival. We'll be back. Stay with us. Welcome back to the conclusion of this show today, listeners. We've got to jump over to Kate in New York, and we'll just take her real briefly here and close it out with Hansa. Kate, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Chris. I wonder if you and your guests there are familiar with Henry H. Klein, who was a lawyer, Jewish lawyer, in the sedition case?
No, I'm not, no.
Well, maybe Hans is. But
he said
a very, very good article. He said, we are no longer citizens of the United States of America. We are now citizens of the United Nations organization, the same as the citizens of every other nation. The UN was created in San Francisco in 1945 by a handful of persons from different countries. Agents of Rockefeller, Standard Oil arranged the meeting. No representatives were from Germany, Italy, and Japan. Where is the authority for such a super government? It is in the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, a document published about 50 years ago. The protocols outline a detailed plan for the destruction of the Christian world and the creation of a world government to be ruled by the elders. And that is your answer, and it keeps going on and on. Until we face that, we're doomed. Thank you.
I don't deny that.
Well, that protocol was found being forgery, as far as I'm concerned.
But here's the point. Whether it's a forgery or not, the engineering of it's going on.
Well, yeah. Well,
it's just like the Iron Mountain report being...
Again, what I'm saying, who basically was in the beginning involved in creating the United Nations was Soviet agent Alger Hiss.
Absolutely.
So now, it's the strategy of communists, of Russia and related countries, to keep America at the negotiating table and prevent any kind of strategic operation against the communist bloc. That's the main reason why the United Nations was created. And,
absolutely. I agree.
And that's why we have to look at it. And when we start pointing at Jews and this New World Order thing and all that, that only serves the Russians, because they're the ones behind these disinformation tactics to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's how it is. You can't have financiers supplying money to communists unless they're really willing to lose the money in the first place. I mean, and they will never be made part of the decision-making process. So either these people are being deceived by the Russians, by the communists, or they are committed communists. But
okay,
there's no intent to finance the communist movement in order to be part of it. I mean, those people must be insane if they believe that. You know, that's what I wanted to say about the New World Order. It should be renamed New World Communist Order. Because
well, there it is.
That's
New World,
what it is in the nutshell.
The New World Communist Order. Now, I'm going to close out with this statement. Give me a quick buzz after the show, Hans.
Mm-hmm.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a New World Order, a world where the rule of law, not the rule of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. When we are successful, and we will be, we will have a real chance at this new world order, an order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and visions of its UN founders, George Herbert Walker Bush, 1991. Good afternoon. God bless you all.